This is a special New Year's Day edition of Peace Watch for January 1st, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. As dissent against a war on Iraq is increasing around the country, today on this New Year's Day special edition of Peace Watch, we travel with two generations of women artists in the peace movement. Grace Paley just turned 80 years old. She is a poet and fiction writer. Ra Goddess is a 30-something hip-hop MC. Both are from New York, and both are peace activists. From WBAI in New York, Deepa Fernandez and Matt Rogers bring us this documentary special.
So I know that it begins with me, you know, and because it begins with me, I have got to start to look at my relationship to violence, and I've got to start to look at my relationship to being American. You know, I've inherited a relationship based on my ancestors, but I'm up for creating a new relationship. You know what I mean?
I, too, sing America.
So my name is Ra Goddess, and in the Kemetic ancient pre-Egyptian tongue, it is pronounced Ra'at Entar. Pretty good for 9:30 on a Monday morning. And it means light supreme. My goddess is an internal goddess. She is an energy that walks with me.
It's nice to do outdoor reading, you know. I mean, there's a lot of air. And it's good. Somebody knew what they were doing. So anyway, I'm going to start to read. And I'm going to read some from this new book, Just As I Thought. And then I'll read a couple of other things.
I've never stood alone on a street corner, but I have stood with three people. I mean, you know, we did a vigil for 8 years on 8th Street, mostly women, but men too. And the vigil said, not your sons, not our sons, not their sons. And it had big pictures of Vietnamese children.
I was the last of actually four children, a change of life baby. And I was born to parents who were extremely active in the civil rights movement. My parents were born in the late 1920s and married in 1951. And my mother originally came from North Carolina. My father's people migrated from Barbados to Virginia to Oklahoma and ultimately settled up in the Albany region of New York. But being raised as a civil rights kind of baby in that time, you know, the things that my parents instilled in us growing up, my brothers and sister and I, was education, family, and community, and a real commitment to each. A real commitment to learning as much as you can, a real commitment to the importance of family, and a real commitment to the importance of community and the obligation of community.
A lot of us had been working against nuclear testing in the 50s, late 50s, even our PTA. And but then one day this remarkable man, Otto Nathan, Dr. Otto Nathan, who was Einstein's executor, came to our group and said, you don't know, this is like 61 or 2, and says there's a terrible war going on in a very small country, and we're doing it, and it's Vietnam. So we had to educate ourselves pretty quickly. And that's really how we began and other groups. And we began to, little by little, have I worked with them, and mostly with the War Resisters League.
You mean when the Vietnam War started, many people didn't know it was even happening?
No, they did not know it.
You here, and we don't expect you to believe us when we tell you how bad it is. It is a flat, scary jungle, thick with scrub trees and tall grass, hot and wet in intermittent rain and strong tropical dragonflies and Viet Cong sniper bullets. You are a long, long way from Port Riley now, and there is no JC Cafe in town on Washington Street where you can sit around the counter eating hamburgers and sipping coffee without having to be afraid a bomb might go off, like it did at that restaurant in Saigon a few weeks
ago. The leaflet we gave out had on one side what was going to happen, you know, what if there was an event or a demonstration or a teach-in or whatever. But on the other side, it told people where to resist the war. I mean, young men gave them the addresses of draft resisting counseling, and stated what we considered what was illegal and for which we could have been arrested. Just that we didn't just counsel draft resistance; we supported it. We believed in it. We said, do it.
And what I remember most about growing up and coming to understand their activism was how important it was to have freedom, justice, and equality. And so I think for me at a very young age, because my activist career began kind of at the ripe old age of 9, my parents were extremely active in local politics, and we used to knock on doors and get petitions signed to get local politicians on the ballot. And we had to be able to articulate why people should sign this petition. And I just remember, you know, we would be in the living room and my mother would kind of be going over it with my sister and my brother and I. And I remembered feeling an extreme sense of importance, like this is important. It's important to my life. It's important to the life of other people who are far less than I am. And it's important to America that this work happen and that we somehow, as this diverse body of people who have chosen to have citizenship in this nation, work to make it better, work to have the concept of the Declaration of Independence, work to have the concept of the Bill of Rights, work to have that concept of freedom, justice, and equality really live.
How do you feel? And you know, I want you and maybe someone else to answer this as well. How do you feel when you are able to talk with someone of another culture and you are able to start to understand them? How does that make you feel?
I have a friend from, I think he's from Pakistan, and another one from Iraq. And they told me, I asked him because I was curious about the same thing he said. You know, I wanted to ask him if their religion, even their religion, it tells them to kill people. And one of them told me that yes, and the other one told me no, and they're from the same religion. And they explained that it was dependent on how you reacted to the things the Bible says.
Interpret.
Yeah, interpret mm-hmm. the things that it says. But then like, when I started talking to the one that said that you can't kill people if because you know what the religion says, I got it.
This is another room. This is a poem called Fathers. It's just an accident that I'm have two father things in one reading. But the other one was written some time ago, and this one's written very recently. Fathers are more fathering these days. They have accomplished this by being more mothering. What luck for them that women's lib happened then. The dream of new fathering began to shine in the eyes of free women and was irresistible. On the New York subways and the mass transits of other cities, one may see fatherings of many colors with their round babies on their laps. This may also happen in the countryside. These scenes are brand new, exciting for an old woman who had watched the old fathers gathering once again in familiar army camps and comfortable war rooms to consider the necessary eradication of the new fathering fathers who are their sons, as well as the women and children who will surely be in the way.
I often think they would have nuclear bombed that place. It really, they were desperate to really totally destroy it. And I've been there. I was there in 1969 during the war. And I saw what we were doing. I was there with a group that had to bring POWs back. And it was something that had been organized between the Vietnamese and the Americans and I don't know who else. And the peace movement. What am I talking about? Yeah.
So they sent a bunch of peace activists to bring American military that were prisoners of war back to the U.S.
What it was really was that the Vietnamese said they would only give these POWs, they would only deliver them to the peace movement. This was in 69, and there were several such journeys made, about three or four months, one each, and we'd bring back three people. But I was on one of them. I was very lucky to get on, to be on one of them. So I could really see what was happening in Vietnam because we traveled through it. I saw the bomb. I saw what we were doing. It was too terrible. And the young people with me were horrified for life. But we brought these guys back, and they were all pilots. They were all guys who were flying around up in the sky and dropping bombs down, you know, and they just... you might say the invention of the airplane was a terrible thing because it has been used really to almost create civilian warfare. I mean, the death of civilians everywhere.
Roger. Good job. I saw you splatter one right in the back with a rocket.
Roger, got lucky again.
I'm fascinated by the fact that you have peace activists bringing home fighter pilots, men who are dropping bombs.
Right. Well, I remember, this is very hard to believe conversation. I said to one of the Vietnamese guys, we also went and talked to people in the prison and so forth, but I said to one of the Vietnamese men, I said, listen, we're taking these guys home, but you know, they're going to get on the radio and they were in their own organizations and the army and say terrible things about Vietnam. Even though you've freed them, they're going to really say terrible things about you. And he says to me very simply, he says, yes, we know that. They will get on the radio, they will get on TV, we know they will do that. But, he says, at night when they go home, they will tell the truth to their wives.
President Bush.
Scared. Scary. I'm not clear, and I don't think he is either. I don't think he really knows the power he holds. I don't think he really understands the opportunity that is available for the United States. It doesn't mean that I don't understand it as a human being, but it concerns me deeply, deeply concerns me.
We are amazed but not amused by all the things you say to do.
For me, the peace came through the music. And I guess sitting here as I say that to you, I realize, well, there's no mistake today why I do what I do. But I remember vividly growing up Jimi Hendrix. I remember vividly growing up the work of The Last Poets. I remember vividly growing up the work of Joni Mitchell. I remember vividly growing up the work of Stevie Wonder. And Stevie Wonder's songs in the Key of Life, I think, and I probably could say this for, you know, millions of us throughout the world who love Stevie's work, but Songs in the Key of Life, I think, shaped me. It is what, you know, almost could single-handedly be responsible for the shaping of my kind of political approach or political perspective. Because I think that Stevie and like many others in that time, was able to find a way to marry the message of struggle and peace, you know. And it's interesting because today a lot of where I work is to evolve the language of struggle to stand, the language of fighting for peace to just standing for peace and standing for equality and standing for justice, which for me gives a different connotation. And I felt like his work was very revolutionary and that it came from that place. She's got daughter's eyes, hands so strong to lean upon. She's got a whole lot of ideas about this world that we're living on. She's got mischievous ways. Where there's a path, there's a will. She's got business to tend to for the forgotten ones. She was a refuge, and when the final words are spoken, and when they write her name on the wall, and when they open up those gates of heaven, we will remember her infinite generosity, 'cause she left us a legacy. And music knows no boundaries. It touches all of us in some way, shape, or form. You know, and so for me, I think it's a powerful medium for that reason, you know. It touches places that words can't always reach.
Now, who got next in this mission? I'm listening. Want to activate more than just your wishful thinking. Make some noise if you're working towards a mission to liberate you and yours as this paradigm is shifting. Please don't get it twisted. My sister be one of the few that's willing to risk it. Put that on the line for a vision and fulfill it. Spare me the drama. I need more than your everyday armor to get the job done. I'm calling on your dharma. God in you, Allah too, or however you do. Atheists ain't got to believe in a dang thing long as you're willing to come through. Transformation don't only belong to the sanctified. It aligns itself with whatever is true. True, true, true.
I was in jail. I'd been sentenced to 6 days in the Women's House of Detention, a 14-story prison right in the middle of Greenwich Village, my own neighborhood. This happened during the American War in Vietnam. I have forgotten which important year of the famous 60s. The civil disobedience for which I was paying a small penalty probably consisted of sitting down to impede or slow some military parade. I was surprised at the sentence. Others had been given 2 days or dismissed. I think the judge was particularly angry with me. After all, I was not a kid. He thought I was old enough to know better. A 45-year-old woman then, a mother, a teacher. I ought to be too busy to waste time on causes I couldn't possibly understand. I was herded with about 20 other women, about 90% black and Puerto Rican, into the bullpen, an odd name for a woman's holding facility. There, through someone else's lawyer, I received a note from home telling me that since I had chosen to spend the first week of July in jail, my son would probably not go to summer camp because I had neglected to raise the money I'd promised. I read this note and burst into tears. It was true. Thinking about some other people's grown boys, I may have betrayed my little son. That summer, starting July 1, stood up before me day after day, steaming the city streets, the after-work crowded city pool. I guess I attracted some attention. You white girl, you never been arrested before? Black woman about a head taller than I put her arm on my shoulder. It ain't so bad. What's your time, sugar? I got to do 3 years. You, huh? 6 days. 6 days? What the for? I explained, sniffing, embarrassed. You got 6 days for sitting down in front of a horse? The cop on the horse? Horse step on you? Jesus. Cop's getting crazier and stupider and meaner. Maybe we can get you out.
The confrontation was not created by the police. The confrontation was created by the people who charged the police. Gentlemen, get the thing straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
Keep this one real tight, rhythmically. Real, like, serious tension. Okay? Let's try it again. 5, 6.
5, 6, 7, and... Young people in this country. Middle school kids in this country.
Funny, silly, immature, precious, wanting, hungry, questioning, challenging, enlightening, a request for something real, something true, something that they can count on.
Middle school children in Iraq?
Scared, foreign, terror, anger, conflicted, but somewhere, and I can't even tell you where this comes from, somewhere, hopeful.
But we had a struggle inside the peace movement. I mean, I remember in my office of the Greenwich Village Peace Center, that some of the boys who were wonderful boys, they were risking their life, you know, they risked going to go to jail and all that. And they had this great thing, boys will say no to girls who say yes. And I remember saying, you know, that's not so nice. That's about as far as I went at that time. I said, that's not a nice thing to say. I don't like, that's not a good slogan, you know. And among the older people, there was a real struggle for the women to take, to begin to speak at big demonstrations and to be part of the meetings, of which many of them were doing the most grassroots work. And there were many women's organizations, Women's Strike for Peace, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which is a very old organization, a very fine one, and it's still in business. And it's very important to me because they're very strong in Vermont.
And a lot of even my work as an activist has been about being a hip-hop activist, you know. And much of the challenges that I have faced in the civil rights movement and in the peace movement are also faced in the hip-hop movement because, as I said, we are a microcosm of the larger society. And the issues of gender in hip-hop, particularly with the advance of commercialism, you know, and the industry, the commercial industrial advancements within hip-hop have created major issues, respect and equality for women. So as a kind of quote-unquote hip-hop feminist MC, you know, my vision for the movement is that we as women find our authentic voice and be willing to stretch the boundaries of hip-hop. You know, be willing to stretch the boundaries of what it is to be an MC without compromising the message.
Tapping the power within, my pen runs ragged like the tracks of the number 2 line. Never coming when expected, but on time. Yeah. Chilling my people to places they want to go. Many believe that what flows through my pen and dances upon my lips be from me and about me. And sometimes the ego wishes it were true, but reality be that I'm the channel, the vehicle. And sometimes the message lingers in my temple for fear that you can't handle it. Won't understand it, will fail to look before judgment. Yet I'm reminded that it is my own fear of the truth that traps them there.
This seems to me one of our worst times. I mean, I remember the Second World War coming on, and I was in my late teens, and I was scared. And nobody was coming over here. But still, I want to say one good thing because I have to because it's my nature. When I think of organizing during the Vietnam War or other periods, it was a long business. It really. You know, little by little, a couple of us little groups would have a little walk in the neighborhood, or we'd persuade a church to do a teach-in, you know. But we We never, it was a long time before we had 100,000 people in Washington. So that 100,000 in Washington and the big demonstrations in all the cities are the one encouraging thing.
One of the things that we are going to really have to address as a community, both as an American, and I should say as a United States community. I want to be very specific, United States community, and ultimately as a world community, are issues of privilege and class. And I think that those cut way across culture and cut way across race. And one of the things that I think has been a prevalent issue within the traditional civil rights movement has been the issue of class, and I think it's also been prevalent in the peace movement. I think it's one thing to talk about fighting for equality and justice and empowerment, and I think it's another thing to look at those who you say you're fighting for as equals. And I don't think we've been able to get there, and more so, I don't think we've been able to confront the fact that within this conversation of peace and within this conversation of civil rights, that there continue to be some of the same kinds of oppressive behaviors that we so diligently and so desperately fight against.
And I'll finish with this. It's called responsibility. Some of you might have heard. It is the responsibility of society to let the poet be a woman. Wait a minute, start again. Erase that. It is the responsibility of society to let the poet be a poet. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the poet to stand on street corners giving out poems and beautifully written leaflets also. Leaflets you can hardly bear to look at because of the screaming rhetoric. It is the responsibility of the poet to be lazy, to hang out and prophesy. It is the responsibility of the poet not to pay war taxes. It is the responsibility of the poet to go in and out of ivory towers and two-room apartments on Avenue C and buckwheat fields and army camps. It is the responsibility of the male poet to be a woman. It is the responsibility of the female poet to be a woman. It is the poet's responsibility to speak truth to power, as the Quakers say. It is the poet's responsibility to learn the truth from the powerless. It is the responsibility of the poet to say many, many times, there is no freedom without justice, and this means economic justice and love justice. It is the responsibility of the poet to sing this in all the original and traditional tunes of singing and telling poems. It is the responsibility of the poet to listen to gossip and pass it on in the way storytellers decant the story of life. There is no freedom without fear and bravery. There is no freedom unless earth and air and water continue and children also continue. It is the responsibility of the poet to be a woman, to keep an eye on this world and cry out like Cassandra, but be listened to this time.
You're still writing poetry, Grace Paley?
Oh, for life. Yeah, all my life. That's what I did in the beginning, and that's what I'm doing at the end.
So for me to walk out on stage, I'm humbled, and I feel honored, and I feel blessed that people even consider, though they don't know me often, that I might have something to say that would make a difference for them. That's humbling.
Ra and Grace, Two Generations of Activism and Art in America, was produced by Deepa Fernandez and Matt Rogers at the studio of WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York City. Special thanks to Andy Lancet at the WNYC Archives, Alexa Birdsong from Summer Stage, the Amherst Peace Choir, and of course, Ra Goddess and Grace Paley for sharing their stories.
No more lying, friend.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown.